Welcome to Nosecast. Homilies delivered in the Holy Gnosis of Thomas Chapel, the Ecclesia Gnostica, in Salt Lake City, Utah, by the Reverend Troy Pierce. Day of the liturgical year goes into a different liturgical gear, I guess that works. Goes into a different season, a different time. It moves into a more fall atmosphere, more martial, more active, masculine type of feeling. And this is particularly true today when we celebrate Michaelmas, or the day of the holy archangel Michael, mostly known as Michael. The archangel Michael is a figure that is encountered fairly early on, even in early Hebrew scriptures. It's a figure who says that he is a leader of the hosts who appears. And this can be taken either to be an indirect way of saying that you are the one whose hosts they are, i.e. that you are an image of God, or as being the general of God, the one who is below God but who leads the heavenly hosts. And that second interpretation is the one that has been part of the tradition. As we had from the lesson today from the book of Enoch, there is a vision of heaven that's very disturbing to the person who's having the vision, to the prophet Enoch. So much so that this tumult in heaven causes him to, archaic translation, it's hard to tell exactly, but it seems like he loosed his bowels and then lost his muscular control. He fell down on his face, it says. He lost his reins, which is usually a reference to your muscles, your being able to hold yourself up even. So he was completely overwhelmed physically. And it says that one of the holy angels, the holy Michael, one of the great ones, came and raised him up and basically saved him from this calamitous vision, this amazing experience he had. It is one of those quirks of history, shall we say, that Michael, the angel, is listed among the saints. It comes from calling him holy, sanctus. And this is such an essential part of the tradition early on that there is Saint Michael. And he is often to be found amongst the saints in any holy cards or statues or whatever you may find. He's there. It's also a very popular name. It's the most common male name, at least it has been. I haven't checked lately. So if you want to get in someplace, just say, oh, Mike sent me. I'm here to see Mike. Pretty much walk through because there's always a Mike there somewhere, or Michael. It's such an essential part of the tradition. And often we see this image of Michael triumphant over the demon, over the devil, over the dark other. And this is a moment that in Eastern understandings of these things, this might be a yin and a yang. And there might be the dark and the light going through cycles with each other. In the West, this is the wheel of fortune, the wheel of the goddess Fortuna. You're always going up, you're going down, things are changing. But the image is always captured right at the moment of triumph, of chaining the devil in preparation for throwing him into a fiery lake. And this encapsulates so much of the understanding and experience of Michael, that this is the spiritual power. This is the good, the light, forcefully there, powerfully there, breaking through, protecting, wielding a sword. This is not a literal sword to be used on the flesh of others, but so many ways we need Michael's sword. We need it to cut through so many things. I was thinking about that today. I thought of the Church of England practice at some point, where there were individuals who had a role in the church. They actually had a title. I'm not sure of it at the moment. And they had a pole, a long wooden pole. One end was a brass knob. The other end was a feather. And their job during the church service was to walk around, and if somebody had fallen asleep, they would get one end of the pole or the other. This was depending on their gender. If they were a male, they get whapped with the brass knob. If they were female, they get tickled awake with a feather. This is a very heletic level, very much a physical, biological level of this metaphorical sword. The somewhat more advanced area is the stick that's used in Zen Buddhism. It's a bamboo stick. And there is, at least in traditional Japanese Zen practice, when there is a large meditation going on, there is somebody assigned, much like previous examples, but he's assigned to go around and see when sense when somebody is not really meditating, aren't really paying attention, aren't really doing the meditation. His job is to then thwack him a little bit, wake him up. You're not doing what we're here to do. You're not engaged in the work of meditation that we're engaged in. You're off in daydreams or somewhere else. And very traditionally, this was not a gentle tap on the shoulder. This was a thwack. And seems that this was a layered bamboo rod of some kind, so it made a crack when you were thwacked with it. So you had both this physical sensation and the sound would bring you back. You'd be brought back to the present that you're supposed to be concentrating on and be able to resume your meditation. To modern people, neither of these devices would be considered acceptable on face value. Being thwapped with a brass knob on a pole just isn't something we do in polite society nowadays, nor is thwacking people with a bamboo stick. But those are examples of this kind of cutting through of something, when you might need something that is like a sword, but not a sword to be used on human flesh, a sword that is used to cut through sleep, to cut through being entangled in thoughts or daydreams, and your intent is to do something else. Your intent is to meditate, is to work on that deep work of consciousness and attention. And so it isn't just somebody imposing something upon you, somebody aiding you in a way that strikes us being a bit weird, but is very helpful. To be thwacked means that you will be brought back into conscious focus, or to be awakened. Sleep in the church service is to be brought back to engagement with what's going on, to your purpose there. And having that aid helps us. It helps us refocus on what we are there. Somebody in meditation doesn't have a little thwack with the bamboo stick. They might continue to waste time doing something else other than what they're there to do. And so that's a compassionate act, to thwack them with the stick and bring them back to awareness. Be a compassionate act to really beat them with a stick, but thwack them once, maybe leave a little red mark, is good, because that brings them back. Cuts through all of what they are currently experiencing that isn't what they are focused on doing then and there. A similar instrument is the bell, and we use the bell in our services as well. It's for the same reason. It's to cut through, you know, to bring us into awareness of something. Traditionally, the bell was rung to call people to church, and also rung at the point of consecration, so that if you weren't able to make it to church, you could still, in a sense, participate. You would know that that transformation was going on, and you could turn your attention to that. If you're out in the field, you can kneel down and focus on that for a moment while the bell was ringing, and then resume what you were doing. But you could have that sacred nature cut through into what you were doing at the time. Become aware of that, focus on that, and then move on. This cutting through is a very important aspect of the spiritual life. So the spiritual has to have a way to intrude. Otherwise, we can often just ignore it very well. Look around the world today, people are really good at ignoring the spiritual nature of things, their own spiritual needs and desires, their own spiritual lives. We have so many distractions, so many means of engaging our minds, our attention, our thoughts, our hearts, that don't involve room for something deeper, something more important to us to come through. So to have a sword cut through that at some point is very important. Often when we experience that cutting through in different forms, we might have sort of an initial gentle nudge, an initial bell ringing or something that tells us that there's something we must attend to. And very often, that's ignored. So there might be a little thwap with the stick, a little something that nudges you a little bit, calls your attention to something. Most often, that gets ignored too. So then there is something big that impacts. There's something large that hits you. Come from some external force, literally, physically knocking you over somewhere, or being struck with an illness, or having something like that happen as a result of neglect or not being mindful. A lot of things can happen. I'm not saying that this is the source of all illness or injury, but when there's something trying to get your attention, it will keep trying and it will kind of escalate until you pay attention somehow. And this can become very dangerous. And so to recognize that there's something you need to pay attention to earlier on is both a saner and safer thing to do. We wrap ourselves up with unconsciousness, with our normal defenses against what might try to get to us, cut through. And we're less aware, we're less ourselves, we're less engaged, we're less spiritual beings. And something can happen, even if it's just ignoring the spiritual, that's still a tragedy in so many ways. Even if you don't have some larger thing come and happen. So to be able to hear that bell, feel that thwap of the stick, is important. To know what that is, that that's calling our attention to something important. And that helps us engage more deeply with the spiritual life. It also protects us in a way. Usually when something's trying to get our attention, it's not for anyone else's benefit, it's for our benefit, for our help. That might be that we're going the wrong way, that we're going to do something unconscious and stupid that might injure our health or crash a car, whatever that we tend to do from time to time for no conscious reason. And if we attend to that initial impulse, that initial contact, we can avoid that, perhaps, or minimize it if it's coming. So be both listening and be grateful for those little dings of a bell, those little thwaps of a stick that help us. It's important. See those as an aspect or element of the divine reaching to us. We must always accept whatever message is given to us. There's always an element of acceptance. An angel means messenger, someone who gives you a message. He's a messenger of the divine. And you can always, I think, ignore your message, but you do so at your own peril, essentially. It's not that they're going to get mad and kick you for it. It's just that it's there to help you. Whenever the divine forcefully sends a message, it's important, something to attend to. So when you get a message in that form that reminds you a bit of Mikhail, the sword, listen to it, attend to it. Even if you think it's kind of crazy to pay attention to this or to make this connection, if your mind kind of clicks on it, it's okay if you entertain the possibility. You may ultimately decide, no, that's just coincidence. But the act of paying attention, the act of turning your consciousness to whatever that is what's required. Because it is being unconscious, is being in darkness, that is the dangerous place. So even if it doesn't make sense, or if you determine after giving some consideration that this really doesn't have any deeper meaning, that's okay. You paid attention. If it was a message, you received it. If it wasn't, you were sure that it wasn't. You got the envelope, you opened it. That's the important part. You opened it, there's nothing there? Okay. You opened, there's something there? Okay. The figure of Mikhail is very important to Gnostics, and it may not be really apparent as to why. But as Gnostics, we'll see ourselves as being in a world that is there to be our friend, in a way. There's control to the slightest molecule for some interrelationship with ourselves. Gnostics, we see the world as both good and bad. It's a mixing place, a place of many forces conjoined. It's not all bad, it's not all good. See, people who are dualistic in their thinking, creation has to be all good because it comes from God, right? Well, the bacteria that eat your flesh, it's not really quite good if they're eating your flesh. It doesn't matter how you think about it, it's just not good. So Gnostic sense is much more sane in my view, obviously. It's just good and bad. The good stuff, hey, enjoy. Bad stuff, be wary of. Some of the bad stuff, particular times, we definitely need some assistance, some aid. And just as that thwacking with the stick, it's when a figure like Mikhail be invoked, be asked for help. both to awaken us, to cut through the shadows, cut through the fog, cut through the clouds, and also to protect us, to give us a figure of divine power to concentrate on, to invoke, to ask for assistance. As for the Gnostic, evil is a real thing. It's a rare position in the world to have as we get this more and more of a new age, unreal understanding of things. To have real evil, but to not have it be held by certain groups of people or something, is a very minority position. Very few people have that. But Gnostics have always had that. So, one is in distress, one can invoke Mikhail as that messenger, as that sword, as someone who is present here in this world, but is really a manifestation, an active force from the highest divinity. And when we talk about figures like angels or archangels, I'm talking intellectually about ideas or about necessarily characters in scripture. It's like everything else in the Gnostic view of scripture. It's metaphorical, it's symbolic, but behind all of that, there's something real. And you can have experiences of angels. You can have overwhelming experiences. And the Archangel Mikhail is a very powerful presence. And you have that experience, then you know you've had it. In all the Christian tradition, there's a reason why there are angels. There's also angels in the Islamic tradition. There are all kinds of divine beings in Hindu and Tibetan Buddhism. There are these deities and protector spirits. And there's a reason for that. It's because we experience those beings. We encounter them. They aren't there as a part of some theological idea. To have these be universal for human religion means that there is some real experience behind it. What that experience is, Gnostics know better than to try to outline theologically, but it is there, present, real. For the Gnostic, experience is always primary. Experience is reality. And so you can have an encounter and have gnosis of these beings. A lot of the time, they're not that particular in a sense. There is something there, but it's not necessarily a particular recognizable form. But what people have encountered over millennia are some particular figures. And the archangels represent some of those particular figures who come up again and again and again, who you can have occasional interaction with. If you're having regular interactions, probably not really an archangel. It's something in that vein. If you have one really overwhelming experience that resonates as this particular being, then it may be. Well, there is this particular experience of Mikhail. And it's always one that is powerful and martial, a defender, a cutter through, wielder of a sword. The sword can be a sword of discernment, sword of awakening, sword of protection, fighting against spiritual forces that may not be good. This real figure is there. Not in any way that we might envision, not dressed in Roman armor as some of these icons have, but these are just images and forms. And what they do is they help us to recognize, to have some initial avenue of gnosis when we have these deeper experiences. A lot of people today kind of get really tied into angels and different forms and go off into all kinds of speculative realms about angels and angelology and hierarchies and all these things. And that takes you into the realm of fantasy, takes you into the realm of speculation at best. Fantasy, generally, is what happens. And it's dealing with the symbols and the symbolism and so forth. At some point, if you're doing this, you detach that from whatever experiences you may have had, and you go with the symbols, you go with the ideas, and you can keep going. You can construct elaborate creations of these beings. But, as we've seen, world religions, there are different forms that you can have. There are different creations. There are different structures you can create. Those beings are still there. And so, to concentrate on the gnosis of them is what's important, to not necessarily seek out any of these experiences, though one can certainly do so, and there is a particular office of Michael that one can undertake to invoke that particular power and have some experience of that. to accept those messages when they come, to invoke these figures when the need is there. If you're busy, you don't want to get bothered by somebody who's just calling up to say hi. It isn't polite or a good idea to just bother these beings either for no particular reason. But when you are in need, then do so. Invoke Mikhail to aid you, and you may sense at that moment a change, a presence. You may not. This is part of the real, deeper inner experience that is a part of this tradition, the tradition of Christianity, the tradition of Judaism, because so many people have had gnosis of that. They've had that experience. And we are inheritors of their collective wisdom, their collective work. So we can use that as a guide to our own experiences, perhaps to invite an experience when the need arises. So the sword of Mikhail is there for us. In the Cathar understanding, it was a twinship, a duality of Mikhail and Christ. And in another understanding, there are different ages of the world in which Christ appears sort of through the energies of one of the different archangels. So these figures are very much a part of our own experience of the divine, reflecting our current needs and situations. Cathars were under attack for a very long time. This figure, Mikhail, came very central. And although the Cathars never raised a sword against another human being, Perfecti would never do that, they weren't above invoking this defensive power by means of hiring mercenaries to protect them. This is a dangerous world. You cannot merely pray for help. You often have to work out some way of gaining help, of getting defense, of doing something to aid yourself. And part of that would be invoking the Archangel Mikhail as a part of that aid. Part of that help, or when you feel something that is entirely an internal attack or change or something. It's hard to describe as opposed to, say, a paranoiac invasion of something a little more psychological. But there are times when you enter a place that really just has this feeling of unpleasantness to it, or you're at a phase when there seems to be some darkness or something that is present that makes no other kind of sense. Those might be times to invoke Mikhail, invoke this divine aid. Nothing else. It doesn't hurt. It's not going to be anything inappropriate to do. So, as we go through this shifting period, it leads to the beginning of Advent, to that penitential period up to Christmas. We have framed with the day of the Holy Archangel Mikhail, the martyrdom of the Holy Templars, in between a different kind of figure, Holy Francis of Assisi. And this is a time for gathering our own sources, our own allies, inner and outer, for entering into that inner world, entering into a deeper relationship to our own souls, our own spirits, inwardly as the fall comes on, as outer work, outer world hushes a bit, becomes a bit more silent, and we can turn inward. So let us remember great friend and ally, Holy Archangel Mikhail, and take that awareness with us into our lives, into our inner work, and allow space for him to be there. So may the mystery of that which hangs fixed heaven descend upon us.
More information and resources on Gnosticism, visit the Gnosis Archive at gnosis.org. That's GNOSIS.org. And the Gnosis Institute at gnosisinstitute.org. If you'd like to continue receiving these podcasts, please consider a voluntary subscription of either $13 or $25 a year. That's $1 to $2 a month to make it possible to continue to provide this service. Thank you.